Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse. Rupert Murdoch has won his bid for Dow Jones. Enough family members have accepted Murdoch's $5.6 billion offer for the company, which includes the Wall Street Journal. Josh Silver, executive director of Free Press, says that media consolidation is on such a scale in the United States that just a handful of companies own virtually all the media that people see and hear every day.
The problem with Rupert Murdoch purchasing the Wall Street Journal, as the owner of a cable network and a TV network, he now owns one of only three national newspapers in the U.S. This small handful of outlets really determines to a great degree what is news in the United States and what isn't.
Most Americans don't realize that the decision to allow Rupert Murdoch and other companies to gobble up all the media stemmed from policies made by government in the public's name, but without the public's informed consent.
There is a real problem here where the owner of such massive holdings of media should really not be allowed to own a newspaper as well. And policies can be passed that will actually make such a deal like we saw happen this week illegal in the future.
The U.S. media is already failing us, says Silver, and the public is starting to understand why.
The way consolidated media has dropped the ball in general with journalism, such as in the run-up to the Iraq War, where virtually every major media outlet did not ask the tough questions. You saw major apologies in the Washington Post and New York Times and other outlets. This situation with Murdoch acquiring the Journal, this just makes things worse, and it's really cause for great alarm amongst not just media watchdogs, but the public in general.
The FCC set the rules governing the auction of the highly valued 700 megahertz band of spectrum on July 31st. The most contested issue concerned about a third of the spectrum being auctioned and how the winner will be required to use it. The FCC will require the winner to build a wireless network to which consumers can attach any mobile device and use any application. But to the dismay of public interest groups, the new rules failed to guarantee that the spectrum could be leased at wholesale prices. Ben Scott, policy director of Free Press, explains.
All they gave us was the right to take a phone from one network to the other, which would be great, except we only get that right on a network that's not going to be built for three more years, and that right doesn't apply to any of the existing cell phone companies or any of our existing phones. Now it's time for the Congress to take up the baton and really do the people's work, to take seriously the problems that we have with internet access in this country, prices and speeds and availability, and finally start taking seriously the fact that we're way behind the rest of the world and we have a massive digital divide, and this is the future of the media we're talking about here, so it could not have higher stakes.
The internet has given ordinary people a chance to speak out on various political issues. The recent CNN-YouTube presidential debate proved that the public is quite capable of asking thoughtful and challenging questions. And now, one U.S. senator is breaking new ground as he uses the internet to develop legislation with input from the public. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois blogged for 4 hours with anyone who was interested in broadband legislation. The experiment spawned a series of interesting exchanges between the senator and the public. Media Minute spoke with Matt Stoller of Open Left, the blog that hosted what is being called Legislation 2.0.
Senator Durbin's office came to me. They wanted to write some legislation online, and I have some background in blogging on telecom issues last cycle. I talk a lot about net neutrality, and so they figured that I might be an appropriate forum for the discussion on national broadband strategy.
Stoller says the prospect of helping draft an actual bill was well received by the public.
Got over 1,000 comments, and Senator Durbin then did it this week on Red State, which is a Republican blog, and it was very successful there as well.
Senator Durbin hopes to have a bill ready sometime in the fall. To read the blogs, go to www.openleft.com and www.redstate.com. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
Today we'll be listening to an archive edition of Media Matters from March 25th, so no phone calls will be taken.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580, coming to you live today. We have a terrific guest joining us on the phone from New York City. Our guest is Danny Schechter, the blogger, author, journalist, noted news dissector, human rights activist, and one of the pioneers in media reform activism. Danny Schechter has written numerous books. He's worked for CNN and ABC News. He's had programming on PBS. He has a brand new documentary out, In Debt We Trust. You can learn about that at indebtwetrust.com. He has a couple of new books out, The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy. Also, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. We are pleasured and privileged to have Danny Schechter joining us today on Media Matters. Danny, are you there?
Yeah, no more than I am, as a great admirer of your work, Bob. And also, you know, this is a really important program because it deals with issues that are ignored by virtually all the programs on the dial, which is a critical look at our media system. And anytime you call them there, I think it's really important, and I'm glad that you're able to sustain and continue it. It seems to be getting stronger every day.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. The show's going really well. We have, you know, thanks to the internet, as you know, and we'll be talking about this later in the show when we talk about your book, The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy. Through the podcasting, our audience has grown dramatically from just what's within the listening audience, which, of course, is the core of WILL, but to a whole community across the world listening to this in real time and also listening to it later on as a podcast.
At any rate, you know, this new technology can help us a lot, but it also doesn't really satisfy the main problem, as you know, which is how do we gain control back to the people of our media system? How do we not simply supplement what's already on, but actually replace what's on with honest, truthful journalism and more access for people? That's the challenge that we have. You know, it's good and all that to be able to get, you know, a video up on YouTube or a podcast heard, but you know, the problem is we don't have the means to market and promote our wares the way they do, you know, in the big media world. And as a consequence, we can't get the kind of market share or listening audience that a lot of this work demands and deserves. So, you know, we're, you know, the glass is half full, I would say that, but, you know, we'd like to fill it up all the way.
Well, Danny, you've been, I think, one of the leading documentary makers, authors, journalists of the last several decades, really. And you've got a new documentary out that I do want to spend some time talking about, in addition to talking about the media and media reform activism. And your new documentary is In Debt We Trust, and people can learn about it again at indebtwetrust.com. And here again is a story, an important news story that's now finally sort of making ripples in the news media. But you were ahead of the curve here. Tell folks a little bit about In Debt We Trust.
Well, you know, I noticed about a year ago, a little more so, you know, that my savings account was sort of disappearing in front of my own eyes, you know, that I was increasingly getting larger and larger credit card bills, that I was charging more stuff, that I was really getting into the whole debt trap. And I began to look into it and realize that I wasn't alone, that this is a national problem of tremendous dimensions, where, you know, our savings rate in America is below zero, minus five, you know, the first time in our history since the Depression.
Let me stop you right there, Danny, because that to some people who might not know economics, that's going to seem, how can you have a negative savings rate? I mean, what is...
Well, that's the whole point. You know, when I was in public school, I used to contribute 50 cents a week. My grandmother set up an account, you know, at the Dime Savings Bank, you know, in the Bronx. And I would contribute, you know, we would bring, you know, some money in, and that would go into the bank every week. And it was basically to teach kids to save. And I was part of that generation, you know, that did that. Not that I ended up with a lot of money, but it was, you know, the idea that if you want to buy something, you know, try to have the money to pay for it. But that is sort of old-fashioned thinking, because the people who run the economy essentially realize that they would do a lot better if they lent people the money up front and then encourage them to spend it. So this has been part of a shift in our country that I look into in the film In Debt We Trust, a transition from a country based on making things, on production, on factories, you know, on workers, working, you know, on products, to a nation based on buying things, the mall being the icon of this new economy, and people are encouraged to shop till they drop, if possible, and get deeper and deeper into debt. At the same time, we're given money up front to buy homes that we often can't afford, and we end up trying to figure out ways to, you know, to cope with all of these costs and all of these expenses. So we have this gigantic credit card industry, which just in the last year charged up some $69 billion in interest and late fees alone. That's just, you know, people being trapped in this situation. And the great thing for them is that most people don't see this as a political problem. They see it, you know, I got stuck here. I should have known better. You didn't read the fine print in the credit card agreement that I signed, when in fact those are designed not to be understood. You know, and moreover, the credit card companies can unilaterally change the terms of the agreement they have with you. And then if you don't pay one of your bills, something called universal default can go into effect, and all of your interest rates will go up, because credit, the various credit bureaus will keep the credit scores, actually have more data on you than the CIA. So we're all in this sort of trap here, and this has gotten led to what has been described as something called financialization. That is to say, there's a credit and loan complex in America that's as big, you know, as the military-industrial complex, if not bigger. But nobody sort of knows about it because they don't see it in those same terms. When you hear military-industrial complex, if you're a thinking person at all, you think that's not a good thing for democracy. But credit and loan complex, well, that sounds good because it's democratizing credit. It's making credit more widely available. The problem is that what's happening is people are becoming more and more dependent, so that experts who look at this say we're moving towards a kind of serfdom, you know, for the majority of Americans. So this is the squeeze is a terrible situation that people are finding themselves in. And just recently, there's been a scandal, what's called subprime loans. That is, poor people were given money, even though they didn't have good credit histories, to buy new houses or renovate their homes, you know, which people want to do after all, to improve their living standards and the like. Now what's happened, the mortgage rates are going up, and a lot of people can't afford to pay these onerous interest charges, and so they are defaulting on their homes. And the Wall Street Journal last week said 1.1 million Americans are in danger of losing their homes. Now, you would think this story would be like page one in every newspaper, lead every newscast, but it doesn't. It has moved from the business pages to the news pages, and in some areas like the papers like the Wall Street Journal, sometimes in the New York Times, this issue has been sort of discovered.
And, you know, Danny, I noticed this morning it made Yahoo's front page as news headlines.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's undeniable. But see, one of the things is that the credit card companies spend something like $5 billion or more on marketing and advertising. So, you know, MasterCard brings you, you know, the Super Bowl, or American Express is advertising all over the media. So it's not surprising that when media outlets cover the story, they tend to cover it in terms of identity fraud, individual problems, people who, you know, want want that big new TV screen and don't have the money and are scamming. You know, this is what John Stossel on 2020 did, a whole hour special, discovering that debt in America, the people responsible for it, are not the banks, not the credit card companies, but the debtors themselves. In other words, blame the people for the problem. And so I decided this is a really serious issue. It needs attention, not just in terms of credit card scams, which we've all heard about, but in terms of the deeper scam here, which is the institutional framework of all the big banks and credit card companies and how much money they are sucking out of the pockets of Americans. You have a kind of a upward flow of money from the poor to the rich, and the income gap in America is growing. So hence InDebtWeTrust.com. And what we've done with it is, it came out, we went to some festivals, people really loved it, but of course none of the distributors would pick it up. Why? Maybe because it was considered to be too political or too serious or whatever. And as a result, we've had to create our own distribution mechanism, a little like the way Robert Greenwald distributes films.
Sure.
And what we've created now is a campaign called Americans for Debt Relief Now. Like, you know, the Bono is fighting for debt relief for Africa, you know, debt relief for America. And we have a special campaign site called StopTheSqueeze.org. And there people can find out more information about the problem and get involved. One of the things we're encouraging, of course, is showing the film in theaters or communities on campuses, because one of the groups that's been targeted by this is college students. I mean, a lot of college kids are leaving school with $40,000 in debt. That means they can't go and intern, you know, at Media Channel or Free Press or, you know, get involved in public interest work. They need to get a job right away to start paying off their loans, and sometimes that can take years. So, and often that means that they'll take jobs they don't want just to get the income so they can pay off their debts. And so a lot of kids, because of student loans, credit card, balances, are really screwed. And they're in pain. And Congress is beginning to talk about doing something about the student loan situation, which is also corrupt to a T. But, you know, the problem is a lot deeper than that. And many of the members of Congress are implicated because they took money from the credit card companies. They passed this terrible bankruptcy bill. Something like $150 million was spent on lobbying on it. So all of these issues, which are about real money and real power, don't get covered. And instead, by and large, but what does get covered are sort of personal scandals, Anna Nicole Smith, or even, you know, a political scandal in Washington, which is good, but the economic system, which is where really the power is, tends to get off the hook.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Danny Schechter, filmmaker, journalist, author, blogger, news dissector, human rights activist, and pioneer of the media reform movement. Danny's been a frequent guest on the show. It's a privilege to have him today. He has a new documentary we've been talking about, In Debt We Trust, which you can learn about at indebtwetrust.com. He's also the author of many books, and two recent books that we'll be talking about in today's program include The Death of Media and The Fight to Save Democracy, and also When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment for Danny Schechter, the news dissector, the telephone number here at Media Matters is 333-9455, and our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455, and our lines are open, so please do call in if you'd like to. Danny, I want to talk a little bit more about In Debt We Trust, because, again, it is such an important issue. One thing I'd sort of like to know is, do you think that, I mean, the broader argument that some economists make about debt is that, you know, it's really not the cause of the problems, but it's sort of a bad remedy for a deeper problem. And I think you were talking about that at the outset, which is if we didn't have this explosion of debt, you know, we'd have real difficulty having much economic growth.
Well, you know, it's true to some degree, but where does the money come from? I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars from China, okay? Communist China financing capitalist America. That's kind of bizarre. And we have a national debt which is in danger of hitting $10 trillion. Every economist in the world is terrified of this. Alan Greenspan even is talking about the danger of a recession. Fox News did a little segment that said, "Will Alan Greenspan please shut up?" This was the man who was lionized as the economic genius of the world. Now they don't want him talking about what could happen here, which is a continued economic downturn. We are not out of the woods on this particular issue. So yeah, I mean, look, I have a credit card. I can't be a moralist and purist about this. You know, on the other hand, I'm now much more aware of what I charge on it and that the bill is going to come due, and that, you know, I have to, you know, deal with this and try to act responsibly. So there's a personal dimension to this. It's, you know, it's not just blame the other guy. We've got to take responsibility ourselves, but we also have to understand how the system works. InDebtWeTrust.com tries to offer some information and tell you about the film, which is available on DVD, to get hold of. It's one of those issues that, you know, deserves coverage that doesn't get coverage. For some reason, in my career, I tend to get out sometimes I feel like it's out on a limb, you know, before the pack on a lot of issues, whether it's South Africa or human rights or the voting in Florida in, you know, 2000, you know, and a lot of issues that I've made films about before they've sort of been validated as an issue. WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception, about the role of the media and the war. You know, when I first started doing it, everybody said, "That's ridiculous. Look at all the embedded reporters. Things are great." And so this led me, Bob, you were too busy at the Media Reform Conference to come, but it led me to make a film about my own career over the last 40-some years, which I'm calling a work in progress. I'm the work in progress, putting the me back in media. And it's an account of all the work we've done, from being a journalist in high school and in the civil rights movement, through working in radio in Boston in the 70s, through working at ABC News and CNN in the 80s, and then launching Global Vision as an independent media company, and which is now having its 20th anniversary, and trying to, you know, develop independent media and get it out into the marketplace, which is very difficult to do. So, and the formation of MediaChannel.org, which is the website that I edit, which has been going for 7 years and is facing a big financial crisis. So all of these issues are part of the story of independent media. And so what I'm hoping is that I can get this film shown in media schools for journalism, you know, for students to get some exposure to what it's really like to try to do this kind of thing. And I showed it at the Media Reform Conference down in Memphis, and I was really pleased. I got a great response there from the people who came, and quite a few people did come to see it. So I was pleased to get it.
No, Danny, in fact, I heard great things about it from people who did attend the session. Extraordinary things, in fact. Our guest today, Danny Schechter. You're listening to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is WILL AM 580, coming to you live so you can call in. Danny Schechter has made not only the documentary In Debt We Trust and the film he just talked about, Putting the Me in Media, but also several books we'll be talking about, including When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War, and The Death of Media in the Fight to Save Democracy. So please do feel free to call in at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Hi. I admire your work so much.
Thank you.
I think this is an important issue. I'm sure there are probably some people that want to get you talking about the latest spin in the Iraq vote and all this sort of stuff. But on the subject of hand, I wonder whether you looked into the payday loan business. There's been some.
Yes, I did.
And it seems to me that one untold story is how much like the big banks like Citigroup are behind those. Thing. They look like, you know, real tawdry storefront kind of places.
And right.
These are people that can't get a credit card, right?
Right. Well, one of the phenomena that's actually very topical this week, okay, is people who go to various tax preparation services to get their refunds right away. And they don't have to wait, but they end up paying an exorbitant fee charge on this. And what we discovered was that there were these rat trap kind of little storefronts in the ghetto in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, and behind the scenes was the HSBC Bank, which was taking $1.6 billion out of poor neighborhoods with these tax refund businesses brokered through all kinds of different other companies, including H&R Block. And we try to interview the head of this program at HSBC. Of course, they refused to go on camera. Just the other day, HSBC reported a $10 billion loss in its subprime loan situation. So a lot of these people who are predatory lenders are now facing a big problem because these people have defaulted and they've been left holding the bag to some degree, although they made a small fortune on it. One of the things I also found out about was 100,000 veterans coming back from Iraq who are in hock up to their eyeballs and have these payday loans. And down in Norfolk, Virginia, where we did some filming, we found out that there were like three payday lenders around the base in Norfolk a year ago. Today, there's 26 lenders that are there, and we managed to get on the base to talk with the Naval and Marine Corps Relief Society that had done a survey about this and found how much pain a lot of these military families are in because of these payday lenders and having to cycle these loans over and over again and pay exorbitant interest on them. So everybody's sort of getting screwed here, but the problem is, and this is one of the things I'm concerned about, is that the progressive community, by and large, has not really spoken out on this. You know, people who are in, you know, Move On and other groups, they're like, and a lot of the bloggers are totally focused on every burp in Washington, every mini scandal, a problem to show that Bush is a liar. He's a liar. He's a liar. How many times have we heard that? But they don't really look at the institutional issues, and they don't look at economic issues too often. So what I'm encouraging, and I have a commentary coming out on Media Channel tomorrow, is that we have to focus on the economic realities, not just on the political realities.
All right. Well, thank you very much, caller. Danny, let me follow up on this with going to the Iraq War, because actually I think there is a connection here because the Iraq War is costing a fortune, and that money has to come from somewhere, and it's coming out of the economy. And, you know, you've written as much as anyone and as brilliantly as anyone about the sham reasons and the dreadful media coverage that led to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. As you look in since the invasion and occupation began, and looking more recently, say since in the last year or so, do you think that the mainstream news media have sort of cleaned up their act and are starting to really present a much more accurate picture of U.S. policy in the region and of what's actually taking place on the ground in Iraq?
Well, first of all, I think the war is basically what I say, AAU. All about us. In other words, the Iraqis don't exist by and large. It's all about Americans, Americans being killed, American policy debates, and all the rest of it. So the Iraqi people tend to be, you know, an afterthought in the coverage, and that remains true to this day. The health situation, the education situation there, the failed rehabilitation there. I mean, we've had some stories about some of the scandals and all this, but an awful lot of this has not been covered. So that's one thing. Two, the continuing, you know, the surge has actually led to the bullying of more Iraqis, people's homes being invaded and all the rest of it in the name of security. You know, 80% of the Iraqi people in various polls have asked that the United States leave. They say the United States is responsible for terrorism in Iraq. But that point of view is rarely heard. The idea that there's an occupation underway is rarely heard. And also, you know, the media failure is much deeper than just selling us the war. Yesterday, I was at NYU at a conference, a journalism history. It was a conference about war and history and journalism. And Eric Bowler,
who
with Media Matters now used to be with Salon, reported on a study he did where he went back and looked in the period 2002 to 2003 how many media outlets in America talked about the possibility of a civil war in Iraq, of the kind of chaos that we're seeing now. How much of that got into the reporting? And he actually went through Nexus. He went through indexed all the coverage. You know, we're talking about 11,000 stories, 11,428 stories on the AP, 9,100 on CNN, et cetera, et cetera. some 60,000 reports with three or more references to Iraq. Of those 60,000 reports, only 11 contained references to a civil war. So the reality of what we're seeing right now, we were never prepared for it. You know, we were, and it was never really put in the context of, you know, how our own policies contributed to this kind of, to the ethnic cleansing going on in Iraq and to the ethnic conflict going on there.
Our guest, Danny Schechter, you're listening to Media Matters at AM 590 in Urbana, Illinois. If you'd like to call in, the number, of course, 217-333-9455 locally. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Let's go to the phone lines now. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air.
It's AM 580, by the way. Yeah,
thank you for catching me. I know I was distracted for a second when I was saying that. Someone was handing me a note.
Oh, yeah. None of us can say what we exactly mean all the time. There are progressive groups that help low-income people with free tax preparation and electronic filing so they get their money back in about a week. In Illinois, there are sites in quite a number of cities, including Champaign-Urbana. And Champaign-Urbana, it's at the Urban League. And the youth volunteers and the Urban League computers and tax programs, and it doesn't usually take too long. I'm one of the people who volunteers for this, and
great.
You know, it's something that anybody can do. But I find it really interesting that conservative groups who, you know, like to talk about the Bible and so forth don't pick up on you know, the story about Jesus and the moneylenders in the temple, and say this is something we should be fighting instead of focusing on abortion and homosexuality. This is something that affects so many people, to have this predatory lending and huge interest and encouraging people to buy things that they can't afford when changing people's view of how to manage their money by making it seem so painless to have a credit card.
Thank you very much, caller, for calling with that comment. Danny, let me follow up on that if I can.
Yeah, please.
You know, the caller talks about how conservatives don't seem especially concerned from her experience with this issue. And you talked about the big bankruptcy bill, which went through Congress a couple years ago, and which was very much a bill that was pushed by the large banks and credit card companies. It was switching the terms of bankruptcy to make it much more difficult for people to qualify for bankruptcy, and was very lucrative for this industry. Does this issue break down on liberal conservative grounds where the Democrats, basically the good guys on the bankruptcy bill, and the conservatives, the bad guys?
Absolutely not. First, let me respond to the caller, because you're absolutely right on. In fact, in my film, I show a lot of examples of how community groups and organizations are fighting back. ACORN, the Consumer Federation of America, the National Center of Responsible Lending, Robert Manning's efforts with students up in Rochester University. I'm absolutely overwhelmed by the fact that people are getting involved in this issue, and we need to support their efforts and make them more visible, basically, is what I'm saying. That's what we're trying to do on Stop the Surge. There's also a coalition of organizations that are speaking out on this issue. So you're absolutely right. There is a response underway, and it needs more attention. I'm glad you're doing something about it. What we found in looking at the bankruptcy bill, which we actually looked at closely, was that there was a bipartisan effort, you know, to pass this bill, that $154 million was spent on lobbying on the bill, and that a lot of the congressional Democrats were as complicit in the thing as the Republicans. So, yes, unfortunately, that's true, and that's why you know, this issue goes deeper than just partisanship, and maybe why some of the partisan groups don't want to get involved in it. In other words, the groups that are just pumping for the Democrats don't want to, you know, call attention to it because their hands are sort of dirty here, or they weren't paying attention, which is another possibility.
Let's go back to the phone lines right now if we can. You're listening to Danny Schechter here in WILL AM 580. Line 2, Champaign, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd like to just say First of all, it's a very interesting show, and I really appreciate, Danny, you being a guest today.
Thank you.
I have a comment and a question. My first comment is, you were talking about recession. You're talking about when Alan, you're talking about Alan Greenspan and this looming idea of the recession, a recession emerging. And then at some point you were talking about the corrupt student loan system. So I'm starting to think, you know, I'm 50, and I think the last time there was a recession was probably in the 1980s, if I remember correctly. And it wasn't so much an issue in my own personal life, but obviously now that I'm 50, it would be a huge issue. I have a mortgage and retirement looming and all these kinds of things, and I have adult children in college, and so far we've managed to escape student loans, but I don't think we're going to be able to escape it. So,
well, you know, you're absolutely right. I know I'm jumping around a little bit. Yeah. The film actually treats a lot of these issues in more depth, and you know, but what I'm basically saying here is that this problem is affecting millions of people across the spectrum, across the partisan divide. Democrats and Republicans are affected by it, blacks and whites, you know, every ethnic group. This is something that that could actually possibly unify us in terms of a fight back strategy, because it could appeal to a lot of people. And in my film, I went out of my way to find some conservative voices who are speaking out on this issue too, to show that you know, this affects everybody and that some people are concerned about it across the spectrum. But like one of the things that's happening on mortgages are people with adjustable rate mortgages are facing what's called a reset, which means that the price of those mortgages are going to go up. And, you know, with the price of gasoline up, with almost everything else up, it's very possible, you know, that we're gonna see a lot more people in terrible economic pain and more defaults and more foreclosures.
Well, Danny, if I can follow up on the comment the caller had too about recession. I mean, as I, having studied economics, if we do go into any sort of recession, there's going to be a lot more people filing for bankruptcy. I mean, it's going to be disastrous if this amount of debt looming in the economy, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, and this is something that hasn't, the people in other countries who write about these issues have paid a lot of attention to. You know, they see this looming debt, you know, burden. They see that the U.S. government has not done anything except spent more money on the Iraq War and other national security and, you know, projects and the like. They see a lack of fiscal responsibility, and they're worried about it, and they're right to be worried about it. We all should be worried about it. You know, we have the consumer debt approaching $3 trillion. I mean, that's a lot of money, you know, and mortgages in America is about $7 trillion. So, you know, this is, you know, the centerpiece of the American economy here. It's not something that's marginal or just going to affect, you know, the Wall Street Journal was saying the other day, well, you know, these foreclosures, a million people, okay, but most of us will be safe. Reference basically to the middle class and the upper class, you know, we'll get out okay. But, you know, when one institution falls, that old domino effect can be seen. We saw it during the Asia financial crisis, which spread from Thailand to Indonesia to, you know, to other countries as well. And, it, you know, there's a tendency here when people lose confidence or they panic, this could affect a lot more people than we think.
Our guest, Danny Schechter. You're listening to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone lines are open at 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. We have a couple callers I'm going to get to in a second, very patient callers, fortunately. Before we get them, let me remind folks that Danny Schechter is a longtime filmmaker, documentarian, human rights activist, journalist, author. He has a new documentary out we've been talking about a lot during the program, In Debt We Trust, and you can learn more about this work at indebtwetrust.com. He also has a couple new books out that are well worth reading, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War, and The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy. So it's a real honor for us to have Danny Schechter here on the show again. And it looks like I had inadvertently cut someone off in mid-question. I'm getting a note here from my producer. So let's go back to line two. Sorry about that. Line two, Champagne, I apologize. Please return to the air.
That's okay. I was the one who was asking about the recession and the student loan situation. So here was going to be my question. First, I was going to say thanks for the information. I wasn't aware of some of this stuff, and I'm really always thrilled to get new information that's useful to me. My question is, in your books, do you address practical application for people who would like to get through future stuff gracefully,
right.
And if not come out smelling like a rose, at least not coming out, like you say, filing for bankruptcy or being crippled
right.
or things like that.
Right. Well,
I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, you know, good question. First of all, I haven't written a book about this. I have done this film on the issue, but on our StopTheSqueeze.org website, we have lots of links to various sources of information and counseling on personal finance. We've been working with Dr. Robert Manning at the Rochester Institute of Technology, who does a lot of work on consumer protection and specific tips for people on how to manage their money and not get into this kind of crisis. So StopTheSqueeze.org is the related website which has this information. Please visit it. And also, by the way, my email is danny@mediachannel.org. danny@mediachannel.org. If you have questions or you have some suggestions of other sources that you think people should know about, please let me know, and we'll put them up on our website if we can.
This is Media Matters. I'm Bob McChesney. Our guest today, Danny Schechter. You've been listening to. Let's go back to the phone lines right now. Line 3, Urbana, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Danny Schechter. Hello, line 3.
Hello?
Yes, you're on, sir.
So it's a kind of related question to the last one. Not so much like the, Susie Orman type advice, but more like what are the top three, maybe four policy objectives that you think should be achieved, like the really most important changes in laws that need to happen to correct this crisis. And, you know, if you have any tips for what people could do on pushing that to happen, yeah, that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, well, there are organizations. I myself, as a filmmaker and journalist,
got it.
I'm not, like, lobbying for a particular legislative outcome, but I do know we do need to have a regulation. One of the things Wall Street Journal noted in the subprime lending market was that 52% of the loans were originated by companies that are not regulated at all. So we need regulation. We need regulation of these hedge funds that are financing some of these efforts also. So that's one big issue. The next big issue is we need sort of some mechanism of debt relief for people who are in trouble so they don't lose their homes, and figure out some sort of way in which they can pay it off under some sort of new negotiated terms so that they're not find themselves in the street, which is dangerous and is happening. So that's another area. On the student loans, we need new legislation and controls over that industry. Nancy Pelosi made that one of the top 10 priorities of her agenda, and there Congress has met on that, on credit card costs. Senator Dodd, the Banking Committee, has held hearings and is going to be recommending some new legislation and initiatives. A lot can be done at the state level as well as at the federal level to protect people. The other thing we need is financial literacy education in our schools so that kids will learn more about how to how to manage their money. I can't tell you how many. I went to Salt Lake City around the time of Sundance. We had 700 people come out to see the film, and one after another was saying, I can't tell my kids, that they have, that they don't take this seriously, and they're deeper and deeper in debt, and I've had to cut them off, and this and that. So clearly, there's an educational component here that should be mandated as part of the schools, or something that the credit card companies should pay on. Underwrite. I mean, you got to realize that these people are making, this is a profit center of a lot of banking. Billions of dollars. So we're in an economy where the average wage on Wall Street, Bob, I don't know if you saw this in the New York Times, like $5,820 a week, okay? They up $3,000 in the last few years. People who are working in financial services, which is, you know, I'd like to be working there because I'm, you know, my weekly wage is going down. And most people are getting jobs that are not real jobs. They're part-time jobs, or they're jobs that they don't have any security or benefits or union protection on and the rest of it. So a lot of these issues are connected. You know, and you create a situation where more and more people are dependent on credit and dependent on, you know, all sorts of corporate practices that are riddled with abuses, and there's nobody looking out for their interests. That's a dangerous situation.
Our guest, Danny Schechter. We have a full bank of callers waiting to speak.
Hey, Bob, I'm lighting up those phones.
You are. Great. I wish this was a pledge drive week. Then I'd really be smiling. That's next week, by the way, listeners. We'll have John Nichols with us as usual and a host of other guests, I trust. So please be sure to be with us next week, ready to call and make your pledges. But let's go back to the phone lines and try to get all these callers in before the program ends. This great show with Danny Schechter. Next up, let's go to line one from Urbana. You're on the air with Danny Schechter. Hello, you're on.
I guess I always thought that the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, at least in the United States, was mainly a tax issue with corporations not paying very much and then people having stocks in those corporations. But has there been anything to split out, like, how much that is due to credit card type?
You've got to put this in the context of, you know, how people are living today. You know, first of all, in many homes, it's like two incomes to be able to pay, you know, to keep things going, where one income used to suffice. Whole industries are sort of being devastated, like automobile, for example, which, you know, people are getting nice sounding payoffs, but in a year or two, that money's going to be gone. What do they do then? And then you have all this outsourcing going on of jobs and the like, unions losing clout, losing members, losing an ability to influence and be a countervailing force to the lobbying of big corporations. And so you have this gap of incomes, which is whittling away the middle class in America. And there's been a lot written about that. It's not just one source of problems. There's multiple impact here, of which credit is part of it.
Our guest, Danny Schechter. Danny, before I go back to the phone lines, I do have one question I do want to make sure I get to you before we go off the air, which is, you know, I've known you for a long time, and I had the privilege of writing the foreword to your first book, which was a memoir of sorts of your career going back to the 1960s. And I've always admired how you
you watch, the less you know. Let's get that title.
Yeah, of course. Excuse me. And I've always admired how you have never really been one to spend a lot of time talking about the past, that you're a person of the moment, and you're not especially nostalgic for the past. But at the same time, I mean, you do have this rich history going back to the early 1960s, being in the midst of American political culture, the counterculture, through to your career in journalism. And I just wanted to ask you, what's your take on how this country has changed in your adult life? And has it changed for the better? What sort of observations can you provide some of our listeners? Probably we have a lot of listeners who are college age or in their 20s.
Well, You know, I think about this every single day because, you know, the hopes, many of the hopes that we had in the early days of the civil rights movement, of the beloved community with Dr. King, of nonviolence, of, you know, more just America, you know, we saw some changes come about, but we see the persistence of racial inequality in our country and a lack of an effective movement to challenge it. We know that. You know, an issue of war, we thought maybe with the end of the Vietnam War, these kinds of adventures wouldn't happen again, but here we are in Iraq, and the war has now gone on longer than World War II. So that's kind of depressing. We've seen the growth of big media and the promise of cable, the promise of the Internet with so many different sources of information, and yet they're dominated by so many others, you know. And, you know, and I'm getting older, even though I don't look it, Bob, you know, and, you know, our company is struggling for survival. I'm not sure we'll be able to survive. Media Channel has never had less support, even though we have more readers, more supporters than ever, more higher traffic than ever. We're in this crunch because we're undercapitalized. We don't know how to market and promote ourselves well enough to be really competitive. And personally, I'm going through, you know, a crisis like a lot of people. What should I do? You know, what if this goes away? What's next? You know, and I'm looking for inspiration, you know, and I know you're a former music critic, okay, and although that side of you, a lot of people don't know about, you know, right? Well, didn't you write about music for many years?
Well, I published a magazine that wrote about music.
All right, so there you go. So, I don't know, just yesterday in the car, I was listening to this album of this documentary on the singer Leonard Cohen, and he has a song, you know, there that touched me in a way, and I just want to, you know, here are some of the lyrics that I think was really interesting. He says, "The birds, they sang at break of day, start again, I heard them say, nor dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. The wars, they will be fought again, the holy dove be caught again, bought and sold and bought again, until we set them free." And here's the key line, says, "Ring the bells that still can ring, forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything, the light behind to see." And that's what I think we have to do. We have to ring the bells that still can ring and try to do something. You know, I went to Memphis. I was involved in early efforts on media reform. And, you know, we had, you know, 600 people. Then we had 800 people. And, you know, more than 3,000 people came to Memphis. More people understand this issue. More people are involved now. There is a growing movement. That's cause for optimism, you know, and hope. At the same time, you know, I like to tell friends, Bob, this is sort of may not resonate in Urbana, but, you know, here in New York we have what's called alternate side of the street parking. You know, Mondays you park on the left side, Tuesdays you park on the right side, right? And I feel my life is like that. On Mondays I'm optimistic, and, you know, on Tuesdays I get depressed and pessimistic. And I seem to be going back and forth, but at least I keep going because hopefully maybe something will happen and that we'll find the support we need or something new will come along. So, you know, this is the struggle when you're not ensconced in an institution, but, you know, when I worked at ABC News, you know, in big media, you know, and now, you know, a lot of those institutions have been strip mined, hundreds of people laid off, you know, smaller downsizing in the media itself, and more money being made by the top executives, less by the producers at the bottom of the pile. So the same phenomena that we're talking about in a larger economy is also happening in the media economy as well, and independent media has to survive and has to thrive, and it can, I think, only if we begin to sort of synergize and collaborate and cooperate with each other more and find ways to support each other more. If we don't do that, if it's just a competitive fight for a couple of crumbs from the table, well, none of us are going to survive. So that's what keeps me going, is that sort of hope that maybe we can find the basis for renewal, you know, personally, in terms of my own self, and maybe politically as well.
Our guest, Danny Schechter, we have two patient callers. Let's try to get them both in before the time expires upon us. Let's go now to line two, Decatur. You're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a comment to make, basically. Pleasure to talk to you. It's apparently this meltdown, or whatever you want to call it, is starting to be heard across the world, as you say. People are getting worried about the economy over here in the United States going down. And so, of course, Washington, D.C., Congress is getting concerned about it. And I'm a little concerned that they're concerned, because what they're going to do is throw money at it. Mm. It'll be just like the SNL bailout, where the people or the companies who made these subprime lens, these predatory lens, to people they shouldn't have been making lens to, will be profiting. They'll be bailed out at our expense, your and mine. And I think that's a shame, because the people who need the help, it ought to go down to the trenches of the poor people who got soaked in these things, and not the lenders who profited from it.
Thank you. Listen. What's ever happened to federal housing programs or people subsidies or ways to help people improve their status? I mean, look at post New Orleans Katrina. People, you know, are still living in the streets, you know, despite all the publicity, all the attention, all the outrage. The programs haven't really come in to help people, and this is a million Americans facing foreclosure. I mean, this is a crisis that is not a small one, and yes, we need help for people, debt relief. That's why we started the StopTheSqueeze.org website. to try to create some sort of way to look at this problem politically, not just personally, and fight back. And you're right, there is this danger of you know, the needy being ignored and the greedy getting rewarded, you know, and we've got to try to make sure that doesn't happen and get outraged about it. And I'm really glad that you raised that issue because it's absolutely a dangerous possibility.
Let's go back to our final caller now for the show today. Line one, Champagne, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Okay, thank you. Great program. I'd like to talk briefly about the bankruptcy bill. I think there are two different votes on it, though I may have that wrong. But I'd like to mention some of the presidential candidates, how they voted. Biden, a couple of years ago, referred to people who defaulted on their credit card debt as deadbeats, and repeatedly made that comment. On this most recent vote in which it passed, Hillary managed to duck the vote.
He's from Delaware, which is the credit card center,
right.
One of the two states that has all the credit card companies there because they don't really regulate them. So he's the senator, they used to say, from MBNA. Not surprising that he would be, you know, insensitive.
And I think Illinois, both of Illinois senators, I know, voted against it, to both Durbin and Obama's credit, and Kennedy and Kerry voted against it, and I believe Dodds voted against it. But one of the comments I wanted to make, I tend to think that the economic structure of this country to reverse some of these trends that you're talking about may end up requiring a Great Depression again. But I'll hang up and listen. I know we're almost out of time.
Well, I hope not. I mean, I think nobody wants more economic pain. I mean, you know, those of us, I have a small business, you know, Global Vision, you know, our media company, globalvision.org, on the web, you know, we're struggling to survive. Can we survive in an era of giants, you know, like ants in a field of elephants? So we have a problem. Depression would be the last thing that would be in our interest. We don't want that. I mean, we do need reforms. We do need regulation. We do need, and all of that will only happen if this becomes an issue, not just something we grumble about and complain about to each other and to our families when it comes time to pay the bills and we got to figure out how we're going to do it every month, but as a political issue. And that's why I hope that In Debt We Trust can ignite the debate that's needed to get this issue out there. StopTheSqueeze.org as a vehicle to try to organize people, the other people who are working on this issue, there's a coalition, alliance of organizations that are involved. We need to find ways to work together to give this issue more visibility. And I think once that happens, then the politicians that were voting one way will start voting another way when the public starts demanding that they do so.
Danny, let me interrupt for 1 second because we've only got about less than a minute left. Were there any candidates for president on the Democratic side, announced candidates so far, who voted for the bankruptcy reform bill?
You know, I don't...
Except for Biden, I guess, if he's a semi-candidate.
I don't have the answer to that. But in the film, you do hear a lot more of the detail on it that you'll find fascinating. I did. I don't have those details. To me, this is not just about partisan politics. This is about institutional change and a need for renewal, a need for people to get together and get involved on this issue.
Danny Schechter has been our guest today on Media Matters. It's been a wonderful pleasure, Danny, having you join us today.
Thank you.
The caller certainly responded well.
And let me just say one thing.
Please
support
do.
This program. Next week, pledge. I want to say something before John Nichols gets in with his eloquence and makes the appeal. You know, support Bob McChesney's work and support this program.
Well, thank you so much, Danny. Much appreciated and not expected. I'm Bob McChesney again. I'll be with you all next week. Danny Schechter, thank you very much. I want to thank Colleen Cook for sitting in today for Andrew Boyle, who's off on his travels this week. He'll be back next week. And I want to thank you all, fair listeners. I'll see you in 166 hours, high noon next week with John Nichols. Have a good week.